And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Today, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
And declare your independence of me, Ernest Hancock, here in Buddha. We're going to be leaving Buddha right after the show, heading the Red Pill. We had to wait. We forgot yesterday was Memorial Day, and we had some general delivery of a new cell booster antenna that a branch took care of. So it's already waiting on us. We'll pick that up after the show, and then it's head down and plow all the way to Rapid City, South Dakota, for Red Pill. Now, the Greater Reset was great, made some new friends. We're going to have introduce some of you, some of them to you guys over the week. We have a lot of guys. I see at the end of the week, Dale Brown will be on Friday. He is the, we've had him on before years ago when he was with private security. They decided in the projects are all these buildings owned by, I don't know, some evil Simon Legree landlord or something, and said, look, you know, you wouldn't have all these rapes, murders, and home invasions and all this kind of stuff if there was somebody that would stop it instead of taking the police report later of, I didn't see anything. So it turned into a security business. It's keeping people safe, and it's, you know, becoming a thing. And you, with strength, nicely, and directly confront the predators and kind of, you know, we'll hear all about that. He had a training session, a workshop on how to do this Saturday. So, you know, Dale Brown, yeah, it'd be good to catch up with him again. Then on Thursday, from the Greater Reset, Chloe Buzada, International Community. That was one of the things that I really emphasized. That was my presentation on Friday. I made sure I, you know, what do I have to do? What can't I do? What's your conflict resolution? You want me to move to your hippie commune? You know, and it's going to come down to, you know, private property and protecting my fence, and I got friends. I mean, that's what it's going to come down to. Well, and we'll, you know, we'll see. You know, I want to see the template these guys have. And then, of course, tomorrow night we'll have James Corbett again. You know, James put up the show that we did this last week up on his site, and a lot of people, you know, always see James, you know, and you get contacts about a lot of things, and that's one thing we're going to be talking about in the first hour today. And then, of course, tomorrow will be Dr. Judy Mikovits. You know, we always get some good out of her. She's getting impassioned, man. You see her and all this other stuff. I mean, it's stuff that, you know, she's told us, but, man, she's not taking any prisoners. Yeah, and this scumbag piece of crap, Fauci, which he's been saying for years. And I, you know, we need to describe that relationship a little bit better. We'll talk tomorrow. Mike McGinnis book, The Essential Revolution. That'll be tomorrow, which is, you know, a community thing. You know, we're over here now. Andrew Bialski is a material scientist, semiconductor guy, Great Reset, building communities again. You know, the gentleman that we met. And I wanted to make sure, and a lot of these are attendees, but they came as leaders of their own community, their own minds, and they either wanted to share or they wanted to, you know, see people they've been communicating with or just kind of make sure this thing's serious. And it's serious. You know, stuff be a happening. All right. Today, in the third hour, we're going to have Steve Neal on. Now, many of you may remember him from years ago. Steve Neal was a precinct chair Ron Paul super from inside the Republican Party in Arizona. And he was one of the guys that, you know, he got the commemorative medallion, the gold we minted and printed and, you know, a law that we had gotten passed that would make gold, silver, and copper production by the state of Arizona in all quantities sufficient to supply all public demand for a gold coin of it, and he got it. But it wasn't in accordance with the law. It didn't have the weight, all the stuff that, you know, we went round and round. They did everything they could to make sure this thing didn't work. And they don't want you to have gold and silver. I mean, it went to Geneva kind of thing. And those started getting involved. Finally, he's just like, really? And Dr. Frank, the commemorative 100-year, you know, 1912. So, of course, in 2012, they had a commemorative Winchester engraved and so on. Beautiful rifle up there. And somebody broke in and stole it from Dr. Frank and his offices. I'm like, oh. So Steve Neal travels the world. He's Mormon. He goes on missions and so on to help poor people around the world electrify and get water and all that kind of stuff. And he's big on electric. One year he has a big acre home with a, I think it was at least 3,500 square feet or something. It wasn't a small house. And electric cars. And his energy bill for his cars, his house, everything, his whole life was like $149. Ha ha, ha ha ha. Because all the solar he had on his home and it offset. So it was like, damn, you can do that? Well, it's time to get caught up on electricity. There's been a lot happened in a couple of years we haven't talked. I wanted to get caught up because Don and I are about ready to go back. I want to get the laws and what they're doing. He pays attention, so we're going to find out. Now, for a couple of hours, we're going to talk to the first 2 hours with Dan Titus. Now, Dan Titus, formerly known as Dan the Smoothie Man. Well, that's like Doug Smoothie. We know smoothie people. Hung up his political shingle in November of 18 and got pulled back into politics in the summer of 2020 during the riots. His main issue is California climate change law and how it impacts the nation. He's been writing about UN climate agendas for the past 16 years. He is promoting this campaign to expose the infrastructure bill. John Birch Society Legislative Action Alert. Stop the infrastructure bill in the Senate. And we got that print out here. Dan issued a new report last month that shows how climate change and critical race theory are being used to make the Paris Climate Agreement hard law. This was when Trump said, nah, I'm done. I'm out of the Paris Climate Agreement. Yeah, no, we're not playing. And then they went, oh, yes, you are. One way or another. You know, so they do the election fraud, get rid of Trump, Biden's in there, and boom, here it comes. Well, Dan's been studying this, and he saw, you know, he's an ardent watcher of anything James Corbett. So when he saw the show that we did, he's like, hey, maybe this guy will want, yes, I do. So that's one reason why I keep my number on the side. I mean, it's not easy. It's not, you know, blaring right there. But if you go through and you try real hard, you can find my phone number. And you get, you know, of course, publisher at freedomsphoenix.com. And I get a lot of contacts and a lot of things from the audience. And a lot of it's a lot of interesting articles that go up. But Dan happened to call. He's had back surgery. He's in the hospital. He's doing everything from his smartphone. And then, you know, I got to do something. Somebody needs to know something about something. And he calls me. And he was very interesting. He had a lot of good information. I said, well, get your butt on the show. You know, let's talk about it, talk about it, talk about it. All right, we're going to go into break in just like 30 seconds here. But, Dan, just to get a sound level, make sure everybody knows you exist, just say hello and introduce yourself for 15 seconds.
Good morning, and good to be with you all this morning. Look forward to the chat.
Yeah, as do I. You know, so what Dan's going to do is kind of give us what the law is, how they're running it through, you know, what it really does, where it came from, what they're going to do with it, and everything we need to know with Dan Titus when we come back. You know, and there is, yeah, you know, you got friends and people and FBI involved in saying hello and you shouldn't be saying, and your credit score just went down and you're not allowed. We'll find out. Dan Titus in just a little bit. You guys hold on.
Crimes of the Crown by Captain Mark. The crown casts the world in shadow and claims to be our guiding light. Cowards clamor for security from boogeymen and ghost stories. While I say these hobgoblins are imaginary, I say those they propped up as our liberators are now subsisting on our bondage. I say there is freedom in the black, and that's exactly where we intend to go. The crown banishes its own officers for exposing its crimes and tortures dissidents to the brink of madness. It dominates the globe and swallows the wealth of generations, leaving only blood and excrement. The crown calls it piracy to explore frontiers beyond its grasp. So the time has come for us to define the conduct among pirates. I say the crown has trampled our necks long enough. Need decentralized solutions to centralized problems? Looking for a community of like-minded scoundrels? Or just want some swag to let the crown know what you think of it? Join the conversation at piratswithoutborders.com. We won't be hard to find.
Rhodes, it's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence. Okay, Dan Titus, let's get right to it. Dan, you know, you got injured back lifetime of I need surgery if I'm laying in the hospital, nothing to do, and things that you're aware of and taking the time and start and researching, and damn, you go, somebody needs to know what's up. So go ahead and tell the story of what you're going to share with us and why it's important. Will you, Dan?
Sure. So I'm in the hospital, and I'm watching C-SPAN. How many people watch C-SPAN, right?
Every now and then.
So a U.S. Senator Coons out of the Southeast comes on and says, hey, this infrastructure bill that's in the Senate, it's not an infrastructure bill. It's a climate bill. And when he said it has a carbon tax in it, boy, did that light me up, because my issue is Agenda 21, sustainable development, blah, 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 Agenda 2030, the great reset and everything as it comes together. So I all I have is a smartphone. I'd been in the hospital for a couple of days at that point, and I start calling all my friends in the little Agenda 21 community. Have you heard about this? No. Have you heard about this? No. So I went ahead and got hold of my friends at JBS, John Birch Society, and I cobbled together a little bit of research on my phone, and they put out a bulletin which I could promote. When I got back home about a week ago, I never really quit, and I saw Ernie on James Corbett, and so I just started calling everybody. This is my second interview. I actually was on another show last Friday, and so that's what kicked me off. You know, I've been studying this Agenda 21 stuff in California, and here's what has me concerned back and around. So I found out that the Biden administration sent a team over, the transition team over to California to copy the climate change laws and stick them in this infrastructure bill. And what my concern is about this, Ernie attested to the fact that the Paris Accord was in, it was out, and now it's back in again. Well, the powers to be have to get the United States in this Paris Accord to move forward. And what very interesting, James had this John Titus guy on, no relation, but I started studying the cryptocurrency thing, and, you know, Pat Wood, I guess you just had on a couple days ago, Ernie, good friend of mine, he basically says in the future, we're going to have a carbon credit system tied to our health records and so on. So the way it works is, you know, Ernie would get 100 credits for his privilege to breathe for that month. And if he wants a better lifestyle, he can definitely do that. But he's got to buy carbon credits on a stock exchange. And that's how the banks get involved. So that's why I'm so concerned about this infrastructure bill. You know, when you say infrastructure bill, you think of roads and bridges, but that's not what it is. So over in California, they perpetually lie to us. So they take the gas tax money and the cap and trade money, and they say it's to repair roads and build new roads. It's not. It always goes to alternative transportation, being mass transit, bicycle, walking, and everything. Maybe your listeners are familiar with smart growth, and that's what it's for. So even Trump's infrastructure plan was a sustainable plan. Now, we've all heard that word sustainability. I submit that it's basically a predictive programming to evoke cognitive dissonance. So I don't even use, I try to avoid using that word. One thing people understand is climate change, and that's what I try to go with now. So that's you know, a little bit of story about my my hospital stay. So all I can say is your JVS, you know, you go in there, you can type in, it's kind of a pre-programmed setup. You just click a button and it goes directly to your senator. So my goal is to put pressure on them. Right now, what I'm concerned about, I heard that the Democrats ask for so many billions and they always go high, and the Republicans have already come back and said, hey, well, we'll give you this. Well, that's the wrong answer with this thing.
Yeah,
that's the wrong answer, because we all lose on this bipartisanship.
Well, decision. What they went to California to copy, all this agenda, whatever the heck, in California, we've done, you know, different things like, yeah, Donna's not here to help me remember who she is. Rosa Corey. Right. Rosa Corey, she's spoken at, you know, one of our freedom summits that we do, and I've had her on several times, and she was a lefty liberal lesbian from Northern California that was doing the Lord's work for taking private property to put back into the ecosystem of saving fish and snails and stuff. And then she found out that she's doing all this eminent domain stuff so they can open another mall or something. And she goes, whoa. What? You know, what the crap is this? And it was sustainable development. Whatever that meant was what they thought was sustainable and who paid them to be sustainable. So Right. Then you get into carbon tax credits was a big thing years ago, a decade or more ago, where they started amping that up. And Goldman Sachs was going to be the ones that brokered and on the stock exchange and trade these carbon credits, of which Tesla, you know, it's one of the criticisms they have of Tesla, because he's an electric car company. He, a big corporation, he like made a bunch of carbon tax credits that he could sell for gazillions of dollars, which he did, I think, to Volkswagen, you know, and some of these other manufacturers, they buy into it. And I'm going, so what is this program that they're buying it? They're already buying and selling carbon tax credits, whether they got it or not. They're already doing it one way or another. There's something in there. What is that? What does that even mean?
Well, let's talk about cap and trade. So if you produce electricity with fossil fuels, you're allowed to make that electricity up to a predetermined threshold. Above and beyond that, you got to go buy permission slips or allowances on kind of like a stock exchange. And that's where the hidden tax is, you know. The cap and trade system over here was installed, and it went for about 5 years, and we almost pushed it out. And boy, did they fight to keep that thing in. So what happens is the difference between, you know, the extra tax credits they got to pay for, that money is peeled off and given to disadvantaged communities and people of color to subsidize them. So this whole Agenda 21 thing, sustainable development, it's designed to destroy the middle class and have the pay for their own destruction through all these taxes.
Okay, now wait. So a cap and trade thing is evil, you know, capitalists doing something, and we're going to tax you to be able to produce power or whatever it is, and then that money goes straight to minority communities for their support of, you know, some people's lives matter more than others and help us rise up against the rich white man or something. Is that what you're saying?
That's it. So imagine taking that.
Oh, no. We can imagine. We're going into break, and we're going to imagine some more with Dan Titus, who can walk us through it. We'll get learnified, and then I'll go over these articles and so on and share it with you when we come back.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock. To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800.
Dan Titus, just a guy, you know, with a bunch of other guys and gals looking at what, noticing that, damn it, I see where this is going. All right, well, we'll give you kind of a alert summary here from John Birch Society. You know, that's one thing. When I first started doing activism and learnifying myself on stuff, it was always John Birch. And you look at their stuff, and I didn't know I was supposed to be skeptical of what they had to say early on. You know, I'm reading all this stuff, and it's exactly what was going on. It gave me some understanding what was happening in the 80s and 90s, early, you know, going, oh, okay, you know, and I had friends that were all into it, and look at this. And then you find out that, oh, no, the John Birch said it, that you can't believe that. That's conspiracy theory, tinfoil hat of truth and stuff. And I'm like, wow, okay, it's like that. Then when we had to restore the Republic in Minneapolis, St. Paul, I think it was, from the 08 Republican National Convention, and Ron Paul did his own Restore the Republic, filled the stadium of, you know, more than what was at the National Convention of kick-ass, and he had on the agenda a John Birch guy come up, because Ron Paul was all, you know, buddies with John Birch guys, and that was controversial. Ooh, he normalized a lot. He goes, look, you want to know what's going on? Talk to these guys, you know? And so I'm not a, you know, I look at the John Birch Society as just another organization that gets co-opted like all of them, you know, but not so much. It's become, you know, like worthless information. They're still doing what they're doing. Do I think that they're, you know, all truth and everything? I don't know. So far, you know, sure as hell have a better track record than a lot of other guys criticizing them, tell you that. So anyway, John Birch Society, a lot of times it's a lot of good stuff. All right. Alert summary. The Biden administration and congressional Democrats are seeking to pass a radical climate change bill disguised as an infrastructure bill that would codify the Paris Climate Agreement and the Great Reset. Well, you got my attention already. I mean, you know, here it comes. Stop radical UN Paris Agreement implementation disguised as infrastructure bill. All right, big graphic of that. Joe Biden, his administration, and congressional Democrats are seeking to pass a radical climate change bill disguised as an infrastructure bill that would codify Paris Climate Agreement and the Great Reset. On March 31st, 2021, Biden White House unveiled its so-called American Jobs Plan. Remember that? This plan is estimated to spend about $2.5 trillion. Wow, man. They're not even pretending anymore. And would raise an estimated $2.75 trillion through record tax increases. All right. We're going to spend $2.5 trillion. Oh, yeah? Where are you going to get the money? taxing you. And we'll have a profit of, you know, $0.25 trillion. $250 billion kind of a slush fund here. You know, we're going to get some from the peoples. Well, you know, whoever they say they're going to get it from. While advertised as an infrastructure plan, only 5% of the funds would actually go to roads and bridges. Even if one takes an expansive view of infrastructure, only 25% of the plan would find such projects. Where will the remaining 75% of the funds go? They will be used to advance a far-left environmental Marxist agenda that would codify the Paris Climate Agreement and the Great Reset into federal law. Environmentalists recognize the plan's potential to implement their agenda, according to the left-wing Atlantic magazine. If you want the United States to act at a national level to fight climate change, this bill is it. This is the climate bill. Plan provisions. First, the plan calls for 100% carbon-free electricity by 2035 and net zero emissions by 2050. The plan's provisions are all designed to meet these goals. To achieve this, a radical government mandated restructuring of the American economy would occur. In other words, the Paris Climate Agreement would effectively become American law, and the United Nations would be in the driver's seat of U.S. domestic policy. Among other provisions, the plan would spend $10 billion to create a civilian climate corps. Oh, I'm feeling all warm and fuzzy about that one. Which would implement the Biden administration's climate projects. Which would implement. What the hell does that mean? And $35 billion for climate change research. we need, whatever. It would spend another $174 billion on electric vehicles, including to electrify all federal vehicles and at least 20% of school buses. Additionally, the plan would spend $700 billion on subsidies and tax credits for green energy, even as it ends all subsidies for the so-called fossil fuel industry, thus rigging the U.S. economy in favor of environmental policies. It goes on and on. $213 billion to produce, preserve, and retrofit more than 2 million affordable, sustainable places to live, blah, blah, blah. And one of the big things, and this is what I was going on about building codes and so on, all that, it used to be, all right, I want to explain this. It used to be, I want to know where all this came from. How did my land become their land? When did that happen? Who did that? And all the sustainable development is just getting further and further to where you'll own nothing and love it. I mean, they mean you'll own nothing. You'll get to own property. It's the state. It's for the collective. It's the in trust for a generation of not yours, okay? And when they did this, this mindset that they have, I'm going, where did this come from? Well, the country was broken up into three regions. You had, I think it was like west of the Mississippi, the west, and then you had, I don't know, Mason-Dixon line or something that cut about middle of the country, and you had the northeast and southeast. Those three regions had different regional building codes because they're different, you know. But they wanted to harmonize and put it all under United Nations of, you know, here it comes. Well, they wanted to be able to have universal building codes that they could just, any municipality could, you know, pull up a template and say, this is our zoning for how you're going to build a wall. And then the HVAC had to get involved, you know, air conditioning, plumbers, and electricians, and everything. So all of a sudden, it's, man, exactly how and what you can and can't do and where. And those standards came from the United Nations. When I found that, I'm going, where did they get, how did the United, who the hell are they? On how we can build what we can build here in America. Well, now what are they doing? They're changing it to go, all right, we need to change even that, the local codes. They got, y'all got it? You got our memo? You're doing it the way we want you to? Okay, well, here's a new one. We want to be able to bring down the building codes to make the smaller lots, smaller homes, smaller, 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 until, like I always say, you're in a shipping container downtown, everything a body needs, gruel coming out, plug in the back of your head next to the light rail system. This is what their goal is. So I'm, and this is how they're going to do it. So private property, what we, this whole thing, do I own myself and do I own my land? I just want to know. You know, we got the cause or revolution. It's why. Then why? Why would you do that? Why would you want to, you know, you don't do away with government for light and transient causes, as the Declaration says. You know, but when you usurp the rights of the individual to a point that absolute despotism, it's your right, it's your duty to throw off such shackles and constitute your own government in defense of individual liberty and the pursuit of happiness, all this other stuff. Is a promise being broken? Abso-freaking-lutely. All right, we're coming up on the break here, Dan, and I wanted to get that all in so that people understand what we're talking about. Then we get into the new report, Critical Race Theory and Climate Change. How did they meld the two? You know, well, Dan's going to, you know, explain that to us when we come back. Can you do that when we come back, Critical Race Theory and Climate Change? Is that something you can speak to, Dan?
Sure.
Okay, so when we come back, you know, that we're going to be doing away with the breaks here pretty soon, so we have to deal with this anymore, you know, in the next, soon, we're working on it. But we'll be right back with Dan, and he'll, how are they intertwining climate change, critical race theory? If that's what they need to do, that's what they themselves are going to do. That's what they're going to do. We'll be right back. Dan Titus.
The overall picture in the real estate market today is one of frustration when you take many factors into consideration. The housing market pundits would have you believe that everything is okay, but the long-term trending on the real estate numbers say otherwise. You are starting to see another wave of commercial and retail center vacancies, which follows a downturn in the residential market. So when you are ready to sell your house, I can help. This is Donna Hancock with Silver Alliance Realty in Phoenix, Arizona, and I can take some of the guesswork out of the home selling process, providing you with market trends in your area and detailing what you can expect before, during, and after the transaction. Being in the real estate business for almost 20 years now has afforded me knowledge of the market, networking with industry specialists along the way, and that includes professionals that can help after the sale to help protect your assets. So let's get moving today. Please feel free to call or message me at 602-828-1819. That's 602-828-1819, or visit my webpage at donnahancock.com.
Freedom is the answer. What's the question?
I want to break free.
You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
I want to break free.
Ba-rum. Uncovering the secrets, exposing the lies. That's what we do. The American Coalition for Sustainable Communities. Oh, sustainable development. How about sustainable community? Who gets to decide that? Good guys, bad guys? I don't know. Let's find out. The American Coalition for Sustainable Communities has issued a new report, Critical Race Theory and Climate Change, How Government is Stealing the American Dream and How to Stop It, to counter narratives developed by the government, nonprofits, and health agencies in the country. All right. So they did a report here he's going to tell us about. In Arizona, we have smart cities. And how was it? Michael Crow, which is the head of ASU, been, spearheading the NQTEL of the sustainable whatever the CIA wants. And this has been open secret, in Arizona forever. And when they come in with the three pillars of this thing, they're going to get their three-legged stool, and they have academia, which was, Crow and, the university system there and so on. Then you have, they call them policymakers, public leaders and all that, politicians. So, policymaker, whoever comes in, we're going to make you with the law. And then the third component was, academic, and then business. And this is where, your Microsoft and Intel's got big plants and everything there in the valley. So they incorporate all these guys. But this is just so they put their name on a piece of paper. Oh, yeah, you're in. Join the thing. Yeah, okay, we get to put your logo up there. A lot of these guys, they don't know what the hell is going on. A lot of times what they don't know is that I know somebody, and they're the ones telling me. And they're calling and saying, hey, let me tell you what's coming on. So what they do is they created this coalition to bring about smart cities. And then they came up with a PDF manual to the city of how you're going to tax everybody to get it, your $2.75 trillion for your $2.5 trillion spending package, which is going to go up. And so this plan is using that and all these different coalitions and so on for critical race theory and climate change. All right, Dan, it's all you, Mr. Titus. Tell us what's up.
Well, let me back up a little bit. So in November 2018, we were talking during the break, and I agree with you, Bernie. I did a two-part video series, and it was called America Don't Be Like California.
Oh, you're breaking up a little bit. Is your signal, do you got your phone in the same place, or you in the bathroom, or what? It's kind of, I'm losing signal here.
Is that better?
Yeah, go.
Okay, so I basically hung up my shingle in November 2018 and figuring that, people really wouldn't wake up until it affected them personally. And then I got pulled back in during the riots last year when, actually just before that, this COVID stuff, my county was going to they were passing out COVID money to small businesses. If you took $2,500...
Okay, you're breaking up. It's like the signal's bad. Are you in the same part of the room?
Yeah, I didn't move at all.
Oh, it's the man. It's the man. Okay. All right. Continue, please.
Yeah. So they were going to install an administrative court system, and a whole new army of people to go around to harass small businesses and fine them up to $5,000 per day for not enforcing COVID rules. Well, we fought that off twice. So that got me back in. And then one day, I'm doing some research, and my county's going to pass this resolution called Racism as a Public Health Crisis. What? What's that mean? Well, let's unwind that. You know all the talk about the wokeness and the critical race theory. That's the racism part of it. That the health part of that, that means environmental justice. So racism is a public health crisis. You had black liberation theologist pastors write a resolution and claim that they were being disproportionately attacked by COVID. And my county passed that.
Wait. How were they? I mean, it's not because the virus was racist or they need... I don't even know what the hell they were talking about. What was their definition of that?
Okay, so what happened? The CDC, this was seen to me like it was all teed up as part of the Great Reset. So the CDC came out and said that black people are dying at higher rates because of COVID. Now, that's a blanket statement. And then all the local nonprofits picked it up and tried to apply that at the local level. See? So... And that's how they, you know, a lot of the riots, a lot of the riots was to get extremists into the Biden administration on this climate change stuff. And at the same time, grease the black community with the money for the equity side of this. Remember the three pillars? You got ecology, economy, and equity. So social justice and environmental justice are key parts of this climate stuff that's going on. So racism is a public health crisis. So remember we talked about cap and trade? That's an environmental justice thing. So over here in California, you have to have set aside money for the poor people in the disadvantaged community and the black community. And that's done with these hidden taxes we're talking about. So that's
Well, how does that manifest itself? I mean, you have a lot of homeless people there. I remember when under the underpasses, there were people, we were involved in it. We had them on the show. We talked to them. We had some activists go and help build. And they were building little tiny homes and putting them down under the bridges, into the marshes, wherever the hell, you know, these homeless camps were, to give them a safe, secure place of, okay, they're going to let you camp here. Well, we'll give you a nice little, you know, put it on a forklift and drop it here and there. You got a house for a couple of people. And they went in with bulldozers and bulldozed them down. Said, nope, not like that. Not allowed. Free market solution of donation of people just, you know, helping people. Not allowed. No, right. No, you didn't have your government permission slip for your restaurant license of health card of making sandwiches. Nope, you're not allowed to, you know, people helping people, not allowed. So I'm wondering, what was allowed? What are they spending? What are they doing as you got a bunch of homeless people?
Yeah, the homeless people are just pawns. Now, remember, after World War II, the government went head on with the charities and the churches, and that's what their competition was. And then they found out they could grease the nonprofits with grant money, and those are the guys that are kind of like the brown shirts that go in, and they're the ones. Like this group of pastors, they're a nonprofit. But the thing that really got me concerned, Ernie, they're all Marxist. So yeah. That's where the Antifa and the Black Lives Matter thing comes in, and I explain it in my report. So,
well, you know, they're losing leadership in Black Lives Matter. They're getting outed for just, you know, money making of doing whatever, and then they're replaced with what, a government program?
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, I think the black community is being used as a battering ram for the...
Of course they are. You know, and I think a lot of them realize it, too. Yeah. You know, but they got the army of somebody something, you know, and yeah. They're bribed and paid for... I've seen this. You know, a lot of the guys, activists, street activists, it was obviously clear during the Occupy movement, and it was paid operatives that are, you know, they know what their job is. They go from here to there to there to there to there. They're the first... throw the brick, they're the one to instigate, come on, the water's fine, and then they disappear and everybody else gets arrested, you know? So I've seen this over and over and over and over. Do you know who we're up against?
Yeah. So here's an important thing. These resolutions, you know, racism is a public health crisis, it caught fire across the country to where even some cities in the, I think North Carolina, a city in North Carolina is giving reparations directly to the blacks. So, wow. I mean, remember, if you, you know, so basically.
You know, I have, you know, Professor Leon Felkins, that's his name, right, Donna? Professor Leon Felkins, remember the black guy professor from Georgetown University? Yeah. It's not Leon? Yeah, go. Let's get him on. And it's all about reparations. He wrote the Obama-era book and all that kind of stuff. And it was all about reparations. And it was, you know, oh, we're going to get some. I wonder if he got it. Are we done now?
Yeah.
Now, Wilbur Leon. Wilmer Leon.
Yeah, a real critical part of this is if you take.
Okay, we're going into break. We're at the top of the hour. You'll hold what. Make a note of what you're going to say, because we're going to get into this when we come back in the next hour. See, I told you it's going to take 2 hours to do this thing. So we'll go ahead and be right back with Dan Titus in just a little bit after the news, and then we'll get into it. Yeah. Wilbur. Yeah, I remember that conversation. A couple of times we had him on, and I want to know what he has to say now. That would be interesting. Yeah, we got along, but damn, we'll be right back.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us, but if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Today, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
We are not afraid! But we are relatively concerned. You know, there is, you know, some lots to be concerned about. Okay, we're going to talk critical race theory and climate change, and how in the hell did they get, you know, intertwined? According to nonprofit groups, the narrative of the George Floyd trial has highlighted deeper concerns of health disparities in people of color due to racism and exposure to environment. The solution to this is health equity. On April 8, 2021, Rochelle P. Walensky, MD, MPH, whatever that means, director of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, CDC, declared racism a serious public health threat. She stated that people having been infected by COVID-19 and that across the country, people are suffering. However, these painful experiences and the impact of COVID-19 are felt most severely in communities of color, where the social impact of the pandemic has been most extreme. These are bold claims. And I'd say the impact has been government. You know, we're going to lock you down and stay inside, and you can't go anywhere or do anything. I'm going to like it. And then, bad stuff happened? Well, gosh darn it, it must be because you're black. I'm going, wow. This, the idea of racism is a public health crisis is a confluence of environmental justice and critical race theory. Both seek to redistribute wealth through equity. The argument is that racism from the past is still here today, therefore is systemic. Systemic racism applies to people of color, but not the white people that you're taking everything from and they're not allowed and you give and redistribute and the wealth of, wow, that's systemic racism is when you do that. So I'm going, man, I thought we were past this stuff, and the racism's got to be resurrected as part of the Marxist whatever. It always has been for decades. Hell, since forever, you know, certainly since World War II. So this has been a tool. So critical race theory, climate change, give us your thoughts, Mr. Dan Titus.
Absolutely. So one thing that wasn't in that, and it was an update, on the day that the officer was convicted for the George Floyd death, President Biden and Kamala Harris came out, special news conference, to say that the United States is systemically racist. In doing so, he deemed every single white person in the country as racist. So what's interesting about what's going on, remember, everything's being run under the health departments right now. That's why the health equity is so important.
Yeah, see, this, I want to make this point. I meant to make it last hour, is that health and safety, health and safety, health and safety, health and safety, that's been a thing that's been drummed into municipalities and counties forever. And I remember even in the 90s, you didn't have the ability to bypass a referendum from the people, which was they could put some ordinance on the ballot and vote and whatever, and no, we don't like it, and we don't want you to do it, and we're going to put it on the ballot for a vote. Unless health and safety was challenged. All they had, I mean, on the stupidest crap, they go, health and safety, health and safety, health and safety, that they would pass something so that people couldn't undo it. That, health and safety is going to be the club that they're beating you over the head with to get this stuff passed. Just saying. All right, go ahead.
Well, there's two type of people. You either trust the government or you don't. What did Ben Franklin say about security? If you trade your security for safety, you deserve neither.
Yeah.
You know, I mean.
And you'll lose both.
Absolutely. So, I mean, it's brilliant what they did. So, I mean, my attempt with this paper, what's important is these racism was a public health crisis thing, right? In every single city, that while it was burning, the white people on the diocese passed these things. Why is that important? Because these things are precursors for setting up. And remember the old affirmative action in the 1980s? There were quotas for black people and people of color and gays and so on, and it went away, and now it's back. So the way this is coming down is, in most cities, they pass the resolution, which is a precursor, and then they set up a special commission to review the police, which is spooky. And over here, they put set up a special committee, and the admission to get on that committee, your skin color had to be black. If that's not racist, I don't know what is. And they try to pass an office. This is what we do. You know, we have to take a knee. We have to follow Kaepernick's move and apologize for being white. And it takes it to this next step of reparations. It's really reverse discrimination, you know. So, so here's what's important about these resolutions as a public health crisis. So they made the blanket statement that the whole country, these black people, died disproportionately from COVID. Now, remember, they were dying. Imagine two people in a row house. The white guy steps out, gets his newspaper, takes a breath of fresh air, and the black guy squeaks open the door, runs out, and he's hit immediately by lightning, smog, and all the environmental stuff. So if you listen to the environmentalists, black people are just being bludgeoned by life, just stepping outside. And that's where they get the reparations for the cap and trade and everything. So it's brilliant what they did. They moved it sideways and said they're being attacked by a virus. So once these commissions are set up over here, basically these black nationalists are saying that we need more black people in government. So systemic racism says that the government's been racist. And that's the reason for the 1619 project. They got to dredge up all the dirty laundry from the Civil War to get their argument now, because ever since civil rights, we were not racist. So they're trying to pad all government, all our agencies, all departments with black Marxists right now. On the order, you ever heard of this guy, Ibram X. Kendi? He's out of Boston. He's the new black nationalist rock star that's pushing all this stuff. So what happened was, after these resolutions passed, I noticed all these brand new black nonprofits popping up. Well, my city was running an equity, an inclusion seminar. And we have Kellogg University over here. And the lady that ran that foundation, she came in and spoke to the youth, the minority youth that are in the city under the under the health department, health part of the city, and she described herself as a change agent, Ernie, a change agent.
So you get designated, whatever.
Yeah. So that my biggest concern was all the Marxism, overt, just in your face, you know. So that, I hope I explained that. You got any questions? Can I clear
it? Well, I wanted to understand why this hit your radar screen from the beginning. You know, you're going, man, this is, you know, you've been dealing with Agenda 21 stuff, and then see it morph into, was it always a racist using race thing, or did that just become another weapon?
Well, okay, so my issue is this Agenda 21 stuff, and I knew when they said health, I automatically knew, because I read the climate action plans in the cities, I knew that it meant environmental justice intuitively. Sent me down that path. I think, I don't know how many other people saw this other than the people on the inside. I mean, so that's how I got involved with it.
Okay, when we come back, I do have a lot of questions. And from someone that's been kind of paying attention to this stuff in California, now Rosa Corey really, really kind of hit it on the head because she was on the inside. She's going, oh, I get it. They're using this issue. When she was there to actually do good, it's a weapon against whom? For what? We'll find out.
From the third letter of Captain Mark. The Crown's observation conditions us to be dishonest with ourselves. Therefore, constant surveillance produces a society of constant deception. Honest communication is the seed of civilized conduct. To deny us this seed is to deny us its fruits. But the Crown's primary objective is to stifle free thought itself, to make its subjects incapable of dissent. Seasoned pirates have always encrypted messages and codes and ciphers, so intercepted transmissions were incomprehensible. But today, the Crown possesses advanced tools of pattern recognition that document, profile, and predict our every move. Today, piracy requires hailing frequencies completely invisible to the Crown. We are tired of poltergeists in the static. Looking for a community of like-minded scoundrels? Or just want some swag to let the Crown know what you think of it? Join the conversation at piratswithoutborders.com.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800. 602-264-2800. And now, Ernest Hancock.
And Dan Titus, you know, explaining critical race theory and climate change and what... Man, I got a bunch of news for you today on this stuff. But go ahead. And, main questions that I got is, as you were studying climate change and agenda and sustainable and all that, I mean, why? How is it impacting you and yours around there in California that all of a sudden the climate change agenda and agenda fill in the blank here was of interest to you because what?
Well, you mentioned Rosa Corey. She was up in Northern California, and the ABAG, which is the acronym for their big metropolitan planning organization up there. And you might remember Mike Shaw. He spoke about this stuff early on. But they approached it from a top-down level. And
Mike Shaw, that name came up before. Is he from Washington State?
No, he's from Santa Cruz. He was the one who went around the Internet. He was called the... Agenda 21 for Dummies, and he had Freedom Advocates. So he and Rosa Corey were actually suing ABAG up there again.
Okay, give me his name again, because this has come up. I think I have a message about him from a good friend in Washington. Donna, write this down. His name is Michael Shaw?
Correct.
Okay, go ahead and write that down. We want to check on... him, Santa Cruz. All right, go ahead.
Yeah, so I plugged into this issue like, well, we're around 2005 with the two global warming bills here. And then you mentioned these guys came in at the... And remember, Agenda 21, I submit that it was already installed covertly. Agenda 2030 and the Great Reset is being installed overtly right in our face. The only thing they're doing is they're holding the apple... in front of your face, and people see the apple, and they're saying it's an onion, and people are going, okay. But anyway, the important thing on this resolution is I challenged the resolution in my county, and I said, can you scientifically prove that black people were disproportionately attacked by COVID? And you can you scientifically prove that systemic racism exists in my county? And I waited, and one evening I got an email, Dan, we can't prove it. So their whole argument fell apart, the precursor and everything. And in my area...
So you mean they weren't talking about inequitably affected by COVID as a racist virus, which has been, you know, gain of function, trying to make it to where you can ethnic... I mean, this has been a thing. You know, South African scientists were trying to, you know, have one, Israel trying to have one, everybody trying to, you know, be able to make it a race thing. Let's target by race. And I'm going, okay. So to say that they wouldn't do that would be dumb. Of course, you know, if they can, they are, you know. But are they saying the virus is racist, or that the policies they enacted because of the virus has been inordinately impactful on a certain race? I mean, how are they making the connection?
Well, under environmental justice, blacks and people of color and anybody divided into a class, they breathe air differently than whites. So they were already attacked by the environment. So they effectively, since the COVID was in the air, they argued that that was part of the environment, ergo they got attacked. They weaved it in, if that answers your question.
Okay.
So, I mean, it's brilliant what they did, but the thing is, we have the Southern California Association of Governors, the largest metropolitan planning association in the world over here. And so guess who's speaking there? Build Back Better. Oh, December. And I just read Klaus Schwab's book, so I was up to speed. And I'm going, wow, if you wanted to push the Great Reset, go to the largest metropolitan planning organization in the world and start talking about this. So that also, and guess who did a resolution on one of those resolutions? SCAG. In several cities, and we tried to stop them, but there were, Ernie, they didn't listen. The NAACP came in, and they just ran us over. But here's the problem they have. They can't prove it. So my...
They don't care.
So here's why. I sat down. Somebody asked me, say, hey, Dan, write... So I've been writing about this for years, so I sat down to do a white paper. That turned into a report, and it turned into an action report when I found out, wow, they can't prove it. And if these resolutions were a precursor to do all this, these other services and everything for these black nationalists, then we can go in and I'll help anybody do this. Just type in racism as a public health crisis for your city. If you see it there, you can blow it up. Now, I'm not saying that maybe in Chicago, hey, blacks, maybe they were disproportionately attacked. But the way it's going over here, they don't have an argument. What's spooky about these commissions that are... Have you heard about that George Floyd bill in Congress right now?
Yeah.
That basically nationalizes the police. Well, you know, overnight, you got these black people on these commissions setting police policy. This is crazy what's going on.
Okay, so the end result of this is, see, to think it's environmental or they give the crap about your health and all that, it's just, yeah, that's smokescreen BS. What is the goal? What do you think is going on?
Well, I think that we're in the middle of a Marxist coup. I mean, I submit we're already a banana republic. We don't have the rule of law anymore. And we're being ruled by guidelines and recommendations and enforced by people we give money to, multinational. You know, this is all to take down the middle class. We're paying for everything. We're paying for our own demise.
You know, I just saw it's a social credit score thing, you know, and they need to know if you got your vaccine and all that kind of stuff. And I saw a nephew of good friends that just been inundated with this kind of information, you know, not to take the vaccine. It's all their friends went so they could go to a concert. And I'd seen you get tickets. It's $100 a ticket, vaccinated, $1,000 if you're not vaccinated. And I'm going, right. Airlines are going to be doing this. A lot of companies are going to be. They're going to be forcing employees and so on. And there's been a lot of people that are, you know, I'm, you know, take this job and shot. I'm not coming back and, you know, because you got this mask mandate thing. And in fact, a friend of mine was telling me it was a lumber yard, and they're begging for employees. And you have two lumber yards that kind of compete, you know, a dozen miles from each other. And one's fully staffed and one's not. The one fully staffed don't have a mask mandate. You know, to think that this doesn't enter into people's decisions of where they work and time they spend and so on, of course it does. So, you know, who's the woke person? You know, it's the owner, she's politically connected, or they have some business to do with the city, or they're got a county hanging over their head of something, of something, of something, and they get their, you know, good little boy credit scores, social credit score with the man for them to be pick me, and you get the government contracts of what I can see what's going on. You know, this is just, are you complying with all of the edicts from, and where is the protection of individual rights, your property rights? The primary role of government is not to keep me safe. It's to keep my rights safe. Now, the other stuff follows from that. You want to keep a country safe, protect the individual's rights, and they'll defend it. If not, then you're the enemy. An enemy government. That's how they title the book. We're going to be right back. Dan Titus, just a little bit more on this. We got plenty of time. Another couple of segments, and we'll get it drilled in. And, of course, Donna's got it in the show notes, all of the articles and stuff that he's talked to. And pull up Rosa.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
And Dan Titus. Dan Titus, iAgenda21.com. iAgenda21.com. He's, you know, promoted that. And that's where? Is that you? Is that something you're working with? What is that, Dan?
It's my website. We started the American Coalition for Sustainable Communities several years ago. I started a publishing label called Monolith Press. We do publications on Agenda 21 under that label. So the American Coalition for Sustainable Communities is, our mission is supporting elected government rather than governance through the administrative state, which are unelected boards, bodies, commissions, and Indian tribes. And that's what we're being ruled under right now. And we can see that what's at the, even at the national level. So, you know, I wanted to, why is Dan doing what he's doing right now? Well, I don't know if you guys know this, but in when Brown, just before he left office, he went to China and made a deal with the Chinese and stuffed the Paris Accord in to California. So when I'm reviewing California statutes, it's in there. So I submit that California is now a rogue state under the purview of the UN. Now, as long as this Paris Accord was voluntary, I could argue that it was unconstitutional, and I continued to put it on public record and do what I do. Once this thing gets in at the national level, it will be hard law, and I will lose my argument. So that's why I do what I do.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's one thing, you know, when they, it's not constitutional. That's obviously not constitutional. It's not constitutional until the Supreme Court says it is. And I'm going, oh, okay. So the black robes and these guys say, no, okay, I get it. You know, now I'm done with this, man. I don't give these guys any deference. I just want to know, uncover the secrets and expose the lies. So the secret of all of what they're doing is what? Do I got a secret here that they're trying to keep secret? What's secret?
What's going on is, you know, we talked about the administrative states getting bigger, the nonprofits, the departments, more and more employees. And at the local level, these nonprofit groups, they're called stakeholders, and they make decisions on your property taxes. And they're a minority group from the local college, and they're talking equity in there. For example, over here in California, we have this thing that called Prop 13 that protects your taxes from going up too much. Well, the local JCs over here, they didn't get $5 million. They got $200 million. And it landed on my talk. I said, forget Prop 13. They're gonna take us out. And with this, all this high-density stuff, more and more people come in, and it stresses the fire, the police, and the schools. So here you are, retired. You think it's open season on people. And not only that, if they're forcing people to put solar on their house, upgrade to smart and everything. And the last time I heard it was going to cost you $65,000, $70,000 to upgrade your house, or you could not sell it.
Tanner, wait, let's go back to this JC thing. JC's got a couple hundred million dollars from whom for what?
Well, they had a, the schools got up, upgrade them. Everybody gets a computer. We're paying for all their, you know, the Wi-Fi, the new 5G. We're paying for the solar cells. We're paying for the new CIO, the new infrastructure, you know, the staff and everything. It's not just books anymore. So, I mean, just over, so remember, it just overwhelms. Oh, by the way, real quick, there's a bill in the California Assembly. If it passes, if somebody wants to camp out on your front yard, they can do it, and you can't do anything.
How is that rationalized? You know, that's one thing I'm seeing there. I remember in the late 90s, at a Libertarian National Convention, there was a table that people came, they, you know, wherever they had political minds and someone wanted to discuss it with them, and they had a book. And it was totally opposite of libertarian philosophy, but they didn't care. They wanted to, you know, expose whatever it was they wanted to do. And the idea was this. Nobody owns anything. It's, and if you're not using it, somebody else can. So if your front yard is not, you got a big front yard and a tent, well, you aren't using it. You know, you don't even have to mow it now. I got it. I got my tent here because I need it. You know, I need, and you got, so it's mine now. And that rationale comes from somewhere. Where?
I think it's collectivism.
Yeah, of course it is. But I'm wondering, you know, it. See, all of this seems like it's orchestrated. It's piecemealed. It's put in, then it becomes policy. And where, okay, example. In Arizona, all the legislators, corrupt, I'm dealing with these people, I'm like, who the hell elected, how the heck did this sociopathic scumbag piece of crap get in this position? That was a minimum job requirement. And how they knew that is that an unpaid position was the school board. And they couldn't keep those filled enough. I mean, nobody wanted to do it. You know, it was just, it was corrupt and it wasn't paid, you know, for and whatever. So, you know, who did it? Somebody that had political ambitions. So then you got some, you know, parents and so on get involved and such. And even as school superintendent, who was the school superintendent that spoke at the Vaccine Education Summit? Donna, what was her name? Yeah, Diane Douglas. She was superintendent of public instruction, which is a statewide elected, get pay you money race. That as you have the superintendent of public instruction, is like you have governor, state mine inspector, secretary of state, attorney general, and superintendent of public instruction. When she got in, she goes looking for budgets that you're not allowed to look. Well, I'm the superintendent of, you freaking better show me. Nope, not doing it. What are you going to do about it? You know, it's kind of what's going on in Maricopa County now with the election recount audit thing. And so she spoke at our summit telling us what the, you know, mandates and vaccines, how they were using all these powers of, and what they were doing with the budgets and all the, I was going, okay. Well, they didn't like her being there. The press, of all the people, Dr. Mikovits and her, they went on about, oh, they got Diane Douglas and Mikovits. It's a den of not government people, don't go, you know. And I'm like, wow. Well, her whole thing was, you go into these different commissions and these different, where they're spending all this money and what they're doing, they're using all of these excuses to implement something. And where these people, the school board people, came from is, I don't even know, but it was a farm team for the big leagues. If they were corruptible, if they voted the way they wanted, if they, boom, state legislature. And if you're good enough scumbag there, you get to be Congress and El Presidente someday. This is an evaluation of these people going through the school board that is unpaid. So what is the criteria? This stuff, and gazillions of dollars to spend of getting budgets of go to the right people. Now they're funded. So when you got Soros spending gazillion dollars to get the right people in, you know, is that wasted money? How does it get back to them? You know, who gets paid? What's the end goal here? Is to take over, all right, and do what with it? For whom? It's not for the people. You know, it's for a collectivist agenda of, And then they go buy a bunch of big houses and live the capitalist dream. I'm wondering, there's something else going on, Dan. What is it?
Well, okay, so Huntington Beach, for example, the dais was flipped from red to blue, and two soccer moms got on there, and they were part of Kamala Harris's radical group. These guys, they're very well funded, they're very patient, and you know, a couple of years ago, they flipped the Orange County, the Great Orange Curtain, from red to blue mostly, and now they're trying to rebuild it right now. But so, who supported those soccer moms? The Teachers Association. And why? When you peel back the onion of why everything goes to pensions right now, at the federal level, state, county, yeah. So I mean, that's a big part of it. And so when you go to talk to somebody in government or at these commissions, there's two types of people, and two-thirds of them, they're ideologues. They've already been bought and paid for, and they don't make decisions on facts. They make it on consensus. And if you were supported by a union and you're not part of the consensus team, they'll get you out. So that's, you know,
it's gotten to you. I got a solution. Let me go. I'm gonna write down my solution here. What's Ernie's solution? Ernie's got a solution. I'm going to explain it to you when we come back. Solution. Solution. I will put it here. All right? We'll talk about it.
Are you feeling confused about the current economic reports that dominate the headlines? Not sure if this is a good time to buy or sell your home, or feel like the process can be overwhelming and confusing? This is Donna Hancock with Silver Alliance Realty in Phoenix, Arizona, and I can take some of the guesswork out of the home buying or selling process, providing you with market trends in your area and detailing what to expect before, during, and after the process. A home is a place where the most important moments in your life happen, so making sure that you know exactly what to expect along the way helps to ensure that you have control. The future is here, so let me help you move forward with your real estate needs. Being in the real estate business for almost 20 years now has afforded me knowledge of the market, networking with industry specialists along the way. Now more than ever, you need an agent that can help you make sense of what many think is a complicated and mysterious process. Feel free to call or message me at 602-828-1819. That's 602-828-1819. Or visit my webpage today at donnahancock.com.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
And Dan Titus, I promise. Solutions, solution. All this has a solution. What's the solution? Well, we'll ask Dan first. Dan, all right, man. Last segment, all this is coming. You've been paying attention. You've been doing and helping defend and small business, and then they go and mask up and, you know, close down and lock down. And we love grandma, and we're going, and then they get locked in, and then they're going, wow, man, this really sucks. Oh, we got a loan program. Yeah, we got a loan program. Then we just had Rand Paul going up against the SBA, Small Business Administration, which I had dealings with back in 90, you know, or 89. And I went back, Washington, met with them. My father, long story. Bottom line, it's all a front. Don't mean nothing. Only people that get, they got this big, giant bunch of money and everything for a small business, and you get to determine who's the small business. And Rand was going, we've already determined that Planned Parenthood is a big business. They are affiliates of, they directed from the top, they have 16,000 employees or whatever, they're doing big, and they don't, and the Trump administration says, yeah, give that money back, that's not for you. And then the Biden administration comes in, they just give it to them again anyway, even after they've been, you know, clearly identified as not a small business, and it was they had to give the money back before, and they just gave them a bunch more, and a little extra. Now what? And they go, and I'm oversight. I'm at a committee of, I'm U.S. Senator Rand Paul in charge, and you're not answering, and you won't tell us that? That's contempt of, I'm going to kick your ass. That's what that's contempt of. You know, what the hell is going on? So the solution is the people you've been helping and they've been screwing you is what there, Dan?
Well, I mean, okay, let's back up here. So Rosa Corey just did a recent talk. It's pretty good if you can find it online. She talks about this climate change stuff, like Agenda 21, Agenda 2030, blah, blah, blah. It's basically milestones. The way I look at this thing, the climate change stuff for the last 30 years is a strategic war plan. And what they're doing, so everything got in at the local level. It's already there, sitting like a mine waiting to go off. You just got to step on it. And what they're doing, my city just last month put a moratorium on gas stations. So what's happening, they're circling back around and putting teeth to all this voluntary stuff that's sitting there. So I just mentioned during to Ernie, California State Legislature has a bill to allow homeless to camp out in your front yard, and you can't do nothing about it. Well, all these climate change stuff, they're going to force you to upgrade your property with solar cells and everything. Oh, and guess what? If you can't afford that, we'll give you a loan for that secured by your house. But you're going to have to upgrade, and you're not going to be able to sell it unless you do that. So now they're coming back around, and now they're nailing literally your property with this stuff. Next year, every single Californian will get a whopping 55 gallons of water per day. And everybody says, well, I can handle that. And then we say, well, you're going to have to choose whether you do a load of laundry or take a shower. Blackouts begin in California this summer. They're dead serious about this stuff. And look what happened to Texas. That's a prime example with electricity stuff. When you get politicians trying to manage the electric grid with this sustainability stuff. So what's my solution? I think it's obvious that with the COVID stuff, they got, well, let's say they got the half the world inoculated. Well, the other half, those are the people we need to work on. The other ones are basically a kind of a lost cause. And you got to say, well, of that 50%, what's your sales potential? Well, let's say we get 10% of them. Well, those are the group that we got to work with, because we need to be aware of this stuff, because it's incoming. There's going to be a major reset at some point, sooner than later.
Yeah, but so, then and your response to it is what?
Well, at the most fundamental level, I don't consent, you know, as far as my freedom, as far as my health. So when, I guess the analog to that would say, hey, if you're an abortionist, they can, if you're for abortion, they say, well, it's my body, my choice, and that's the same argument I use with taking a vaccine. So remember, you and I created the states. The states created the federal government, but you'd never know that after 2.5 generations.
Yeah, that's coming around. It always comes down to, you know, these fundamental arguments that had already been, you know, settled in history and so on, which is why they got to rewrite history, which is this 1619 thing. I never even gave enough deference to even look. I mean, they just had some Supreme Court thing ruled down on some stuff on that. But what is it? You know, 1619 rewriting history of systemic something. What do you know about it?
They're saying that the United States was built on slavery, and so in order to get their argument now on systemic racism, they have to redefine the past or go to the Civil War. Because that's when we were racist, obviously. But ever since civil rights, it's total BS. So you remember the Fabian socialists? Their little logo shows two guys banging on the world. And so they have to annihilate everything and wipe it out and rebuild it in their image.
Whose image? To what purpose?
Well, I mean, look at the French Revolution, and then coming forward, the Russian Revolution. Back then, if you didn't agree with them, they'd just shoot you. Well, here, remember when Khrushchev banged his shoe on at the UN, he said, we'll take you from the inside? Well, yeah. They did it.
You know, I mean, have you ever heard of the Green Cross and Mikhail Gorbachev and all that?
I'm familiar with Gorbachev, but I didn't hear about the Green Cross.
I'm sorry, what?
I haven't heard about the Green Cross.
Okay, here's a new arrow in your quiver, okay? You got a pen, you're going to want to write this down, all right?
Sure.
When Mikhail Gorbachev left the Soviet Union, what happened to him? All of a sudden, he disappeared. They privatized a presidio up there in San Francisco Bay Area up there, and they gave him an office. So he had an office on a former naval base, and what that office was working on the Green Cross. The Green Cross was, you know, part of Kyoto Rito. It was all the beginning of the economic, the environmental agenda, of which Mikhail Gorbachev was the head of. It eventually got morphed into United Nations. And the Green Cross was all of this environmentalism stuff that was headed by, funded, and went and United Nationized and everything by Mikhail. So if you go, you know, I just, you know, I'll do a search on it right here. And then we had, you know, there's, you know, there's so much stuff, you know, I got pulled up here that we could yak about, but, you know, damn. All right, so I'm going in, hit, and Green Cross Wiki. Let's do a wiki thing and see what's up. Now, when I found out about this is when we had some big forest fires, and the federal forest rangers wouldn't allow citizens in northeastern Arizona to use their own heavy equipment to fight the fire and defend their properties. And they go, nope, 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 nope. So in 03, after this big fire up there, they came on my show, and they said, we found out, who the hell gave them jurisdiction? Tell me what I got, where I got Green Cross. And I'm going, what? I never even heard of this thing, you know? Let's see. Green Cross. All right, Mikhail Gorbachev. Mikhail Gorbachev, and I can't spell the name, Green Cross. If you look that up, you'll go, whoa, you know, I had no idea what the hell. Okay. Donations by people, companies to Green Cross, Safety National, Mikhail. Oh, no way. Did they take it down? That would be awesome. I see a bunch of references here. We're towards the end of the show. I wish I had this pulled up. But just look up. Yeah, I see references to it here. Mikhail, M-I-K-H-A-I-L, Gorbachev, is G-O-R-B-A-C-H-E-V. He was the last premier, head guy, president, whatever you want to call him, of the Soviet Union. And when he went away, he went off to do the Green Cross. And we'll look it up during the break. I'll make sure Dan gets this. We've talked about it before. But, yeah, search it on Freedom's Phoenix, you'll find it. And that's another thing. You know, Google is not the best. A lot of these search engines, you know, just go off of Google stuff anyway and then anonymize it for you. Right. But it is, you know, it's a Google thing. And if they don't want you to know, they'll hide it. It won't be on the first page thing like it used to be. And because they can. Dan Titus, you know, you keep doing what you're doing, and he's going up against the man in his hospital bed with his smartphone, which means that'll be turned off here directly. So I want to make sure that, you know, any of you got some good stuff like this, just call me. You know, if you can find my number, you can call me. You go Freedom's Phoenix, you can find it somehow. Oh, Dan did. Thanks, Dan.
Appreciate it.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix.
Yeah, don't worry about
Ernest
it. All right, we're coming
Hancock.
In. Here we go. Hold on.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Today, let us make them remember.
No fear, no fear, no fear, no fear, no fear, no fear, and declare your independence of me, Ernest Hancock, here in Buda, Texas, in Buda, in beautiful Texas. What we're going to be doing is right after the show, we're going to be leaving, heading up to Rapid City, South Dakota, you know, going to Red Pill, the Red Pill Expo with G. Edward Griffin and friends up there, and it'll be awesome. awesome. And of late, I've been thinking a lot about my good friend, Steve Neal. Steve Neal back in the Valley. And the reason is it looks like you have your cover over your camera, Steve. You know, not that we can do video anyway. You know, sometimes...
There's no cover over the camera.
All right, well, it doesn't matter. We're just doing audio anyway. So go ahead, we'll save the bandwidth, and there ain't no thing.
Yeah, show and tell.
Okay, so what we're going to do is I want to make sure that we get an introduction to Steve. And, how we know Steve, and I don't have a bio sheet, so I guess I'm just going to wing it. So he was a precinct committee chairman or politics and heading Republican Party in Arizona, and had his fill. But not before he kind of got, Ron Paul enamored him just a little bit. And, he has a lot of friends that are politically active. And the big thing that he's an engineer that, knows a little thing about solar here a little bit. And what he did is he filled his rooftop, and he has a nice larger ranch style home in Phoenix with acre or quarter acre or something. And what did he do? He has electric cars. He has electric life, and for an entire year it was like $150, $147 or something he paid. I'm like, what? Get your butt on the show and let's talk all about it. Now Donna and I are traveling the country in the Love Bus Liberty Tour. And when we get back to Arizona this fall, we're going to be, hopefully right when silver crypto shoots the heck up and then land prices take a dump, and that one's ours. Well, we already bought the copper because I knew what was going to happen there. So we got the copper wiring and stuff for the solar in the house. We got the panels. I think I'm going to be making my own lithium iron phosphate batteries. We've been using Battleborns in the bus. I like them. And that chemistry seems to work pretty well. And you can do that yourself for cheap. And inverters keep getting, cheaper and better. So I held off on those. And I'm going, all right, Steve, is it time for me to, bring this stuff in together? I start buying it. And then what's the law in Arizona, because I know that you are working head-to-head with the Corporation Commission and Salt River Project, which is one of the electrical suppliers, and Arizona Public Service, the APS, they're another electric that's kind of this quasi-government thing. So this is how we know Steve. Steve was also instrumental in outing how they applied the law and creating gold, silver, and copper medallions that will be produced in sufficient supply to supply all public demand. Well, of course, they didn't want to do that, so legislation messes with that. So there's a lot to get caught up on with Steve. Steve, all right, introduce yourself, fill in the blanks, and let's find out who you is in the next 5 minutes. Go ahead and just tell him to call back in. We'll try and do it. Because his video wouldn't work and there was something. But Steve Neal is a leader in his own community, and a lot of times he goes on missions. He has a big family and so on, retired, and he'll go on missions around the world, to help, who needs some help. Well, these guys, they don't have water. They don't have electricity. I can hook them up. We can save a village. It takes one person to save a village sometimes, and that's what he does. But he's also involved in what I want to talk to him about is solar, with the utilities and the businesses thereof. So this is something that's of interest to me, and I want to make sure that we, hear about that. Is he communicating with you, Donna? Now, off air, since I got 4 minutes to fill, when we were talking about the Green Cross in the last hour, it's Green Cross International. That's what'll pull it up. Now, this is, I give you the first paragraph here, and you kind of understand what we're dealing with. Green Cross International is an environmentalist organization headquartered in Geneva, Switzerland. It started out of the Presidio. But Switzerland, founded by former Soviet leader Mikhail Gorbachev in 93. Today, there are member organizations in 30 countries. Its primary mission is to respond to the combined challenges of security, poverty, and environmental degradation to ensure a sustainable and secure future. But Green Cross International was founded by former Soviet leader Mikhail Gorbachev, 93, built upon the work started by the 92 Earth Summit in Rio de Janeiro, Brazil. So this is the Rio Earth Summit. On the 6th June, 92, the Rio Earth Summit delegates asked Gorbachev to establish Green Cross International. And around the same time, Swiss National Council MP Roland Weidecker founded World Green Cross with similar aims. So here you have, you know, the Green Cross, and then you got the World Green Cross with similar aims. The two organizations merged in 93, becoming Green Cross International, which was formally launched in Kyoto, Japan on 18 April 93. So when I say Rio, Donna, come help. And when I say Rio and Kyoto, that's where they both came, got together, boom, now they're all United Nations. So there you go. All right, we're trying to get Steve back in. All right, can we hear you now, Steve?
I hope so.
Yep, boom. Boom, he's got a solar panel behind him. Yeah, because you demand. All right. We tidied up some stuff from the last hour, so we're good. We got a minute before we go in, and we'll go long if we need to without commercial interruption, make sure we get all things, Steve. All right, Steve, what have you been doing the last couple of years since I talked to you? Tell me everything.
Well, lately, something probably of interest to talk about would be energy independence, because how unreliable the grid is becoming. I was in Texas and Houston for the deep freeze when two-thirds of the town lost
power. That affected Houston, too?
Yeah, badly, very badly. And I was in Utah for the worst power outage they've had in 30 years. I worked in utility regulation here and have heard the utilities, presidents of the utilities, the CEOs talk about they're worried about keeping the lights on.
Okay, during the break, we'll fix your volume, too. We got to get you to get it up. Let me see if there's something I can do. I'm at 100. Yeah, if you go into where it says mute down on the bottom left, and you go audio settings. Let's see. I got you all the way up. You need to turn your microphone up.
Let me try.
Yeah, we'll get Steve up. When we come back, we'll get right to him. We'll be right back in just a little bit. Steve Neal is going to tell us all about Arizona and solar and power and the man and around the world and energy becoming intermittent and what shall we do about it and how much did it affect Steve and family. Yeah, probably not that much, but he's going to help us. He's helped people around the world. How about
from the sixth letter of Captain Mark? A pirate's life is characterized by voluntary interactions. Unfortunately, the crown presses everyone into involuntary servitude. Landlubbers believe slavery was abolished years ago, but the crown still claims to own us when it crimps us into service against our will. Given sufficient ambition, it would gladly draft thousands of hapless victims to kill or be killed. It's simply slavery by another name. Landlubbers are routinely commanded to serve the so-called justice system in jury duty. But before you swell with civic pride, consider that how you feel is irrelevant to the crown. You will appear as ordered or face punitive measures. The crown insists that you participate in your own oppression. A jury summons provides pirates with a unique opportunity to obstruct injustices. A juror can vote not guilty, even if it's proven the law was violated. A juror can acquit for any reason at all, and not even a judge can reverse that verdict. Receiving a jury summons is basically winning the sedition lottery. But if you reveal that you know this during jury selection, you'll probably be dismissed. If the crown foolishly crimps a pirate into jury duty, it behooves the pirate to conceal their intention to nullify unjust laws. If a master takes 100% of your labor, it's called slavery. But if they only take 50%, they call it taxation, a difference of degree, not of kind. Whether the crown claims a fortune or a cent is irrelevant. Most of all, a slave owner desires contented slaves, meaning thoughtless ones that accept their bondage. These house slaves see no contradiction in being drafted in a war to end slavery or summoned to a jury to prosecute tax evasion. An ideal slave knows no higher call than the master's will. The crown's highest ambition is that its slaves revere the authority that subjugates them. But the crown does not own me. I will not surrender my time and treasure to the crown's ambitions. Join the conversation at piratswithoutborders.com.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800.
602-264-2800. And now, Ernest Hancock.
And Steve Neal, friend from Arizona IA, that's heavily involved in politicking right up until that. You know, I'll just take care of my own power, thank you. But we're going to find out stuff. Now, Steve, you know, give us your bona fides and political philosophy and involvement and dealing with these guys and how you know what's up. You know, go ahead and tell us your history a little bit.
My wife got me to be a Republican after 30-something years of being an independent. And my wife and Ron Paul. And he was, just such a breath of fresh air. Still is, though he doesn't get the attention he did before. And we went to the Republican convention in 2012 in Tampa as delegates from Arizona, elected by our state convention, and went there to see the whole debacle of how it's really just a show, that there was no debate, there was no discussion, there was no nothing. It was Mitt Romney was the anointed one, and so that was disappointing to see that the matters weren't even discussed, the important matters, no longer a Republican after that experience. And work in utility. I'm retired. I spend my spare time, most of my spare time, working in utility regulatory matters here in Arizona, trying to keep the utilities honest, which is a tough job because they're monopolies, they're shareholders. They're high-paid executives, and it's a tough situation for them to think of anything other than the money.
Well, the money for themselves, the money for the corporations. You know, when you say the money of what, for whom, for where? You know, is this a personal wealth thing, for their company thing? Because in Arizona, explain the corporation commissions and how that deals with rates and so on, and then your personal experience of how you're able to have a $150 a year electric bill with a house and electric cars, you know? I mean, so, and of course, you're interested in this, and they keep trying to make your bill go up. They're going, whoa, you're not supposed to do that. We need some money from Steve, you know? So, you know, go ahead and explain the situation.
Yeah, so the Corporation Commission in Arizona is the Public Utility Commission. Plus, it regulates corporations and LLCs. Their job is to ensure that rates are just and reasonable. That's a quote from our Arizona statutes. They're under five commissioners and 100 staff are under a juggernaut of hundreds of utilities and thousands of staff and thousands of attorneys also, who are doing everything they can to maximize the return on investment for the shareholders of those corporations, those public utilities. They call them public service corporations is the official name in Arizona.
Yeah, I want you to explain this so people on the radio understand what you're talking about. As I understand it, when the Arizona Constitution came in, we became a state in 1912, it was, you know, a progressive document. It had a lot of rights preserved and against the man and all that and stuff. The Arizona Constitution is not too bad, you know, compared to most. But there's this Corporation Commission thing to where utilities start coming in. We had electricity and water and so on. And it's so important that we need the government to tell us how it's done. Explain that.
Yeah, so rather than having open competition, they saw the need for setting up franchises that you get a certain territory to cover. And there's been fights over the territory, lots of lawyers involved over the years, and establishment of, you're going outside your boundary. Well, somebody's got to go outside there. Those people need power. They need water. They need telephone. And they've settled most of these matters in courts and by out-of-court settlement, and now they have their franchise, their territory, and they're entitled to a return on investment. And they what they do is they
entitled to return on investment. Who entitled them? Where'd that mindset come from?
Well, that's part of the business But what happens is their return on investment far exceeds what other people. There's been lots of known cases of utilities of corporations coming into states like Arizona and buying up small utilities and then massively increasing the what they call the plant, the amount of physical equipment involved, so that they can maximize, so that they can increase their return on investment. So generally it runs around 9-10%. And so they will take their money that they've got in other investments and they will invest it in their own physical plant, drill new wells, put up new power lines, build new power plants, and then come to the Corporation Commission and say, look, we've got $1 billion of investment here. We'd be looking for $100 million of net profits every year. And that's how it works. It's a crazy situation.
So what role does the market have in it? You know, just people... competition, bidding, doing, that doesn't self-regulate anything, or they, and one of the things, well, answer that, but then I wanted to get to when they were encouraging or by mandate that everybody get solar panels and so on, so they didn't have to invest in infrastructure, and then people started doing it, they didn't need them anymore, and they go, wait, you're doing a little too well there, Mr. Neal, so, explain that relationship between people that produce and the people that wanted them to produce and then they didn't. How'd that come about?
Yeah, that's what we typically called the rebate and switch. So they took money. Utilities across the country have done this, not just in Arizona. They have collected, a tenth of a penny per kilowatt hour from all their customers and then said, hey, those of you who like solar, who want to do solar, we would like to encourage you, incentivize you to put solar on your roof or on your back 40, wherever it is, and pipe it into your house, pipe it into your buildings, your warehouse, whatever. And so they did that for about, let's say 6-7 years from about the late 2008 to 2015 in Arizona. They were incentivizing people to take this utility money, take the federal and state tax credits in various states, and to go and make an investment. And solar was my first solar system. The first panels in the year 2000 cost $4 a watt just for the panel.
Yeah, now you can get them for like 30 cents a watt.
Yeah. So to run a 100 watt light bulb would cost you $400 worth of panels right there.
Damn.
More like 500 because there's inefficiency. There's lots. So then after 7-8 years of incentivizing.
Okay, wait. We're going into break. I want to hear all about this when we come back. It has gotten so dirt cheap. I don't really need them anymore. I don't know if they like that or not. I thought they were supposed to like that. I don't know if they like that. We're going to find out if they like that. And Steve Neal, because he liked it. And then what happened? We're going to find out. Steve Neal, when we come back in just a little bit.
There are those that just want to be left alone. And those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
With Steve Neal, everything residential electric, and then all the politics that go along with that, and then we'll talk about, we'll go long and we'll get into all the, pandemic and what happened in Arizona and how he does it, and they can suck it. So, when you first started doing this back in 2000, you're paying a gabillion dollars, for solar, but you did it anyway. Why?
Since I was a teenager and first read about the solar photovoltaic, I thought, wow, that is the most amazing technology, especially for Arizona. And it truly has gotten only more amazing. The panels are literally 3 or 4 times more efficient than they were in the 1970s when I was a teenager. And they're 1/100th the price of the 1970s. And you're correct, 30 cents a watt is a common price nowadays for those who buy a good amount of panels.
And so it's just amazing. Like I mentioned before the break, $4 a watt was my first panels. My second panels in the year 2015, my second set was about $2, maybe $1.80 a watt. And the prices have, you know, continued to plummet, even with tariffs, even with the government, the federal government, instituting tariffs on panels coming from other countries. They're still 30 cents a watt.
Well, hell, are solar panels even made in the U.S.?
All I hear about is factories shutting down and possibly getting rebooted. So I don't think there's any current production going on.
So let's make them more expensive because they can, seriously. Okay, so real quick, I keep pimping, you know, the concept of what you had and how cheap your energy bills are and everything. Tell me how that's possible, how you've done it, what you've done to help others, what the pitfalls are, how much they're trying to charge an extra and get more out of you. Tell me everything. Go.
All right. So my system went in I think I said 2015. That's incorrect. The current system went in 2011. It's a grid-dependent system with a grid tied that has, overproduces electricity for my house. Well, it's overproducing since my kids have gone on to college. It did not overproduce when they were here. So now the overproduction is going into, we now have two electric vehicles, and the overproduction goes into those electric vehicles, and we're still overproducing. So it's a great setup to know that you can produce your own electricity, you can produce your own transportation fuel, and my system, while it first was grid dependent and only ran if the grid was there, I have added equipment to it to make it grid independent so that it can run without the grid. And it has had to go into that mode. And it wasn't expensive. It's basically about the original system cost $25,000 back in 2011. In 2014, to make it grid independent to run without the grid only cost another $2,500. So that there are ways to do this to make your grid dependent, grid tied only system function.
Okay, we need to explain that. A lot of people that don't have electricity from solar don't understand this. Real quick, if you were to buy, we have friends and live in Sun City. They got a $30 a month bill. I mean, you know, and mostly it's fees and crap, and you got to pay us something anyway. So you're tied into the grid. You get when you overproduce, which often a lot of them do. You get paid a fraction of what they're charging you, so it's not, you know, equity here. But so let's say they give you, I don't know, how much they give you? A nickel a watt, you know, a kilowatt or something? How much are they paying you?
Yeah, this past year of overproduction was a nickel. It was 4.9 cents a kilowatt hour. So they charge about 11 cents a kilowatt hour, but the price of electricity has skyrocketed. The previous years, they pay us the Palo Verde, which Palo Verde is the largest nuclear generating station in the U.S. It produces the most megawatt hours of any generating station. It's almost one of the top five in the world, I believe. And the normal Palo Verde price for the past 10 years has been 2.5 to 3.5 cents a kilowatt hour, and that's what they pay us. What the average price was over the year at the Palo Verde Exchange out in west of Phoenix. And this year it was 4.98 cents, I believe, or 8-9 cents. So it skyrocketed because of tightening natural gas supplies, very hot weather, lots of wildfires shutting down power lines. So, but yeah, still a nickel is a fraction of what they charge everybody else. So they basically take the power that I overproduce and they sell it to my neighbors at full retail.
Ah, see, that's the deal. In 1994, we did an initiative that had, I don't know, I figured I just threw it out there, you know, all overproduction, you pay the people at least 30% of whatever it is that, you know, you're doing, or half or something like that. I just threw out a number. And I didn't know any better. But of course, I knew the future. Well, what happened was, the solar industry, they're all calling me and they wanted to be buds. And they knew back then it wasn't viable, but I knew eventually it would be. Well, now we get to the point to where you are tied into the grid and the grid powers your system to even run. And they don't want you feeding back to the grid when the power goes out. The reasoning is when you have a guy working on the line, he goes out there and all these solar panels charge in the system and boom, they get shocked. Well, one, test it. Two, there's cutoffs along the way all over the place. And three, you can have a grid tie system that turns totally off the grid so that you can use it. Because if you have battery as storage and you have a grid tie system, when the electrical grid power goes out, even though you are producing power, you can't use it. Explain that.
Yes, those were the safety standards put in place to keep the linemen from being shocked. It's, for the most part, it's in our typical grid situation, it's a total red herring because the systems overload in a fraction of a second and shut down. Because your neighbor's homes and air conditioners and everything else are trying to soak up your puny little electricity compared to the thousands of megawatts out there on your grid available. You have maybe, my system is only 5 kilowatts, and a kilowatt is 0.05 megawatt, and the SRP grid that I'm on is capable of 10,000 megawatts or, just 10 gigawatts. So it's just a joke. But it is a good idea, especially if you're it is a good idea to have safety systems. And they always design for the worst case scenario. And those scenarios can't exist. So because of that, the original inverter systems were all based on batteries. You would have a battery bank in your cabin or your beach house in Mexico or in some remote area where there was no power lines. And those batteries would power your inverter, and your inverter would power your wiring. And the batteries were charged by the solar panels or a generator, a gasoline, diesel, propane generator. So when they went to these grid-tied systems to push power back to the grid, to do what's called net metering, what you describe as the arrangement where you're able to overproduce in the daytime and use it tonight and overproduce in the spring and fall and use it in the summer and winter, and then maybe overproduce overall. We do what's called annual net metering here in Arizona for those of us who are grandfathered, and we need to talk about that because nobody gets the deal I'm on anymore. Not since 2014.
Okay, we're going to get more detail on this. We're getting into nitty gritty. We're going in the break. And when we come back, it's all about how net metering works. And what about, I just want to be off the grid. Well, now you can. It's cheaper. You're not just subsidizing your electricity with your own solar and so on. Now you can be your own utility. And for your neighbors. Like, sell it. No, you can't. You're not allowed back. Hold on.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
And our friend Steve Neal. Now, Steve has experienced since, for 20 years of doing solar. And it's gotten to the point to where not only can you get net nothing of you owe me money at the end of the year and power your house and cars and everything else, it's also, and you can be autonomous off the grid. You can say, and we're done. But they're going, no, solar's bad because in the monsoon, it's really from like beginning of August to middle September, it's hot. It's really hot. And it's much more humid than Arizonans are used to. So your evaporative coolers, which is just, water mist over pads with blown air, and it really cools it down quite a bit. That doesn't work anymore. Everybody's using all their power, and they don't have extra power. They got to go to the grid. Well, they still are producing some, so they say that's bad. But over the year, you got net metering over an annual look at it, and you're going, yeah, we're fine. But they still need base load that they want to do, or you just get more panels and more batteries, and it gets cheaper and cheaper the footprint on your roof gets less and less, or you get more power and you have battery backup. What are you advocating? What's happening? What's the laws? What are they going to do? What's the future, Steve?
Okay, yeah. So you're talking, the term for what you're talking about in the industry is grid defection. That means you're going to defect the grid. You're going to leave the building. You're not going to rely on the grid at all. You're going to rely, like you do in your Liberty bus, on solar and maybe a generator occasionally if you get into a situation where there's not enough sun, which doesn't happen too often.
Well, it's been happening out here in the Midwest. You know, it's been freaking raining for a month and a half. But in Arizona, man, you're 365 days. How many days of sunshine?
Of very little sunshine, only about five or six a year. But even then, the surprising thing, if you've ever had solar thermal, like a hot water heater or something like that, on a cloudy day, you get no hot water. The amazing thing about solar photovoltaic is on a cloudy day, you're still going to get 25 to 75% of your normal production. And just call that 50% on average. So that's a nice thing about picking up the sun, even though it's coming through the clouds. It's just not as bright. So grid defection is a growing trend. And there's also a trend towards not exporting, self-consumption. So most all the new inverters nowadays can be set so that they're told, no, I don't want to send power back to the grid, because they're not going to give me anything for it, as in some cases, or they're going to pay me very little, or they're going to put me on a special rate and charge me higher prices if I send power back to the grid. So in non-export and total self-consumption, by trying to use, when the sun is shining, use power like crazy. So it's the opposite thought of what we've been taught by the utilities for decades is, you can't use power during the day. That's the peak pricing. That's the expensive power. You got to shift your laundry till after the sun sets and before she gets hot, till after the, and shift your electric vehicle charging to the middle of the night and shift your air conditioning. And you can sleep cool, but don't try staying cool during the hot heat of the day. Throw all that out when big solar comes in, when you put enough solar on your house to handle that, or in your ranch or wherever, or in your bus, you can throw all that out. The peak energy production, the most comfortable, the most active energy consumption time of the day is when the sun is shining.
Yeah, our friend Bob out in Tonopah, he had more panels and lithium iron phosphate batteries in addition to his nickel irons. And he's like, woohoo! It's 2 in the afternoon. It's time to do laundry. Charge them batteries. Charge the cars. Charge everything and use it and kind of run the crypto miners, because it's sun be a shining, you know? So that's when you do it. And then, of course, you go into the evening, hopefully with charged batteries. Everything kind of goes down. You're done with all your work. So you go to the morning. Boom, you start it all over again. So this is, I can see with the technology now. And what about batteries? Are you a big battery guy now or no?
Yeah, I've had batteries for 7 years. Started off with lead acid, transitioning to lithium iron phosphate, or LFP as they call them for short. And we ran a youth encampment out in the middle of the forest. This is the beautiful thing about this technology. We wanted to be on the show last week, couldn't be, because I was so busy up in the hills of Arizona, up in the Ponderosa Pine Forest, 6,500 feet, beautiful, never saw anything above 72 degrees. And we ran a super large 10,000-watt sound system and 2,000 watts of LED lighting on a stage. We set up our own stage there so the kids could perform and have a talent show and a game night and learn some good things from the Bible and the Book of Mormon. And, you forgot to mention I'm a Latter-day Saint. But so we
You live in Mesa and you're a Republican. That means he's Mormon.
Yeah. Okay. Former Republican. Uh-huh. And so we ran all that off of just a handful of solar panels like you have on your bus, because we weren't doing much during the day, but at night when we got in the amphitheater area with the lighting and the big sound system, we ran that off of batteries, a lot of batteries. And we had a lot of lithium iron batteries remotely. We had them mounted in Polaris Rangers so that the little quad type of vehicles, so we could go out and make announcements in the camp. There were 400 people there, so this was not a small gathering. And we needed sound systems, so we had three remote sound systems, all powered by LFP lithium batteries, Simplify brand, for example, and running through a 12-volt inverter. And we also, on the Rangers, the little 2 and 4 seat vehicles, we ran those off of the 12-volt inverter hooked directly to the battery on the inverter, and it powered up a 400-watt sound system, no problem at all, which was plenty of volume to get the message out to people. So that's another thing we'll want to talk about, is these power outages and how to get around them, this unreliable power that we're facing. Our utilities here in Arizona are in a panic after last summer and then the deep freeze in Texas, where their natural gas supplies were cut and their other things, and their prices skyrocketed. So we can talk about that also.
Well, how to be waiting on you, man. No wait on me. This sounds awesome. I need to know what the electric prices have gone to. I mean, it was when we were doing mining there. Excuse me. When we were doing mining there.
In Arizona, yeah.
Yeah, I know. I got some like coffee grounds in my throat. The when we were doing mining there, you had the 10 to 3 or something. If you got this one package, it was only like, 6 cents a kilowatt. And but if you were in that framework, it was like 20-something cents. So what we did is we go, okay,
yeah.
I put hot water heater, 10 of them, hot water heater timers on it to where it didn't run the miners except for the other times, and it was still a gazillion dollars because of all the fees. And the fees, I thought, were like a set fee. They're not a fee, they're a tax, because it goes up. It's not like a set $100 amount. It's per kilowatt that you're using that they're charging. That's not a fee, that's a tax. And I'm going, you lying sacks of snot. And that screwed up all my calculations on everything. So we're going into the show here real quick. Steve and I are going to yak it some more, because there's a lot of stuff that I still want to go over. And he's demonstrated in his church youth camp thing up there how much you can do autonomously with hundreds of people out in the forest. And you got nice weather, and you got all the power you need for the evening using battery storage. So we're going to talk about batteries, talk about the future in the law in Arizona, because you want power, you go to Arizona, you got power. Power's not a problem, especially in the day to run your split air conditioner life support system so that you are nice and cool in the summer, warm in the winter. This is Arizona's going to be all about your comfortable and your life support is done, and you're not freezing your butt off somewhere or baking because you got sun. I think you might put Arizona on one of your lists. And with the elevation, you can get whatever temperature you want. God forbid you have two homes in Arizona, you're living large. A lot of people are going to be living in Arizona.